Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager. And in this week's Weekend Essay podcast, we have acting editor Michael Climes looking into what Strictly Come Dancing can teach politicians. Take it away, Mike.
It's a worrisome time for your country when Strictly Come Dancing is arguably more democratic than the election of a new Tory Prime Minister. And not just any Conservative leader, but the third Tory Prime Minister in 7 weeks. The political contest the public has been subjected to has none of Strictly's qualities. All of its participants are deeply unpopular with the public. They do not rise to the occasion, and none have stable partners. In fact, all the contenders say one thing in public and another in private. There is constant backstabbing, and everyone is either very angry or very miserable. Strictly Come Dancing would not be so popular if the celebrities behaved like squabbling politicians. In other words, if Westminster was a dance floor, it is one filled with anarchic chaos that would be entertaining if nothing was at stake. The telling point is that those on the dance floor, average Tory MPs and members, probably have more income and wealth than their general voter. How else to explain the cavalier remark from some Tories about the government needing to stay in power to provide stability when achieving the opposite? The same goes for other extremely weird arguments and happenings since the kamikaze mini-budget of 23rd of September. Everything from the Tory regime from that date has had the air of unhinged desperation. None more so than the idea Boris Johnson could have a second run as Prime Minister. The former Have I Got News For You guest was somewhere on holiday in the Caribbean when he suddenly flew back to fulfil his patriotic duty, save the nation from whatever it needed saving from. The arguments from Slavish and Craven Johnson backers made my skin crawl whenever they spoke on the radio. It was impossible to decide which soundbite was the worst. Only Boris has a mandate to govern. Only Boris can win the next election. Or only Boris can unite the party. It was astonishing to see selective amnesia in people that would be declared physically and mentally competent in other circumstances. Or maybe I overestimate them. Private Eye, as usual, capture the mood perfectly with an advertisement titled, "Are You Suffering From Memory Loss?" To be fair, I would probably be suffering memory loss if I'd put the country through what Johnson has and still support him. Everyone, bar the exceptions, has the moment when they are by themselves and must account for their own dreadful mistakes. It was gruesome to be reminded of Boris's flaws by MP Steve Baker, who said, even if Johnson became Prime Minister, he could be out of the job very quickly. This is because we are still waiting for the Privileges Committee report into whether Boris misled Parliament over COVID parties. So if Boris had ascended to the throne again, a new bomb would have brought him down shortly after, and we would be back to square one. The Tory parliamentarians who had the nous to see this would happen steered clear of Boris for that very reason. I was relieved when Boris withdrew from the contest on Sunday 23rd of October, as the country was fortunate to escape with a near miss. This has not been the experience recently, as we have been hit repeatedly over the past several years. Still, I quote Boris's concession speech in full for you to laugh. In the last few days, I've been overwhelmed by the number of people who suggested that I should once again contest the Conservative Party leadership, both among the public and among friends and colleagues in Parliament. I've been attracted because I led our party into a massive election victory less than 3 years ago, and I believe I'm therefore uniquely placed to avert a general election now. A general election would be a further disastrous distraction, just when the government must focus on economic pressures faced by families across the country. I believe I'm well placed to deliver a Conservative victory in 2024. And tonight I can confirm that I have cleared the very high hurdle of 102 nominations, including a proposer and seconder. And I could put my nomination in tomorrow. There is a very good chance that I would be successful in the election with Conservative Party members, and that I could indeed be back in Downing Street on Friday. But in the course of the last days, I have sadly come to the conclusion that this would simply not be the right thing to do. You can't govern effectively unless you have a united party in Parliament. And though I have reached out to both Rishi and Penny, because I hoped that we could come together in the national interest, we have sadly not been able to work out a way of doing this. Therefore, I'm afraid the best thing is that I do not allow my nomination to go forward and commit my support to whoever succeeds. I believe I have much to offer, but I'm afraid that this is simply not the right time. It was hard to establish whether Johnson actually did get over 100 nominations required to run. I would not be surprised if Johnson said he'd got the numbers, but actually didn't. This is a pattern the nation has seen before, but his supporters forgot about it. Before Johnson's attempt at a second coming, it is worth recounting what led to that potential resurrection. Liz Truss, nicknamed the human hand grenade, lived up to the hype and self-detonated her premiership. Prior to taking herself out, Truss sacrificed her close friend Kwasi Kwarteng as Chancellor in the coldest way, in full view of the public. There was the extraordinary interview Truss did on the BBC with Laura Koonsberg at the Tory Party conference. She said it was the Chancellor who was the one who decided to make the cut in the top rate of tax. That happened the day before Kwarteng gave a keynote address at the Tory Party conference the following day. By mid-October, it was game over for Kwarteng. He cut short his time at the International Monetary Fund summit in Washington, D.C., and made his way back on Friday, the 14th of October. By the afternoon, he was toast, and Jeremy Hunt was named as his successor. In hindsight, I find it hard not to feel a bit of sympathy for Kwarteng, as he was made into a human flak jacket. The same extends to Truss as well, but sympathy for them and the government must be balanced against wider considerations. Millions are struggling and do not have the financial or social capital that comes from being an established politician. And while the mini-budget has been reversed, the damage has been done. We will all be poorer for years to come, and the country's reputation has been tarnished. Britain is also on its fourth chancellor in 4 months and third Home Secretary since the beginning of September. It is true that Rishi Sunak is the first Prime Minister of Indian heritage and the youngest leader in the modern era at 42. But he was still put into power by coronation and not election. And that is a source of potential instability. At least the public can vote people off in Strictly Come Dancing. In fact, our current crop of politicians could learn the main lesson from that show. You need partners to achieve results.
Thanks, Mike, for another entertaining weekend essay podcast. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.